Before we get started, I want to take a quick second to talk about Strava Summit. In addition to hosting Athletes Unfiltered, I'm one of the writers on Strava's marketing team. But I used Strava for years before working here, and I even paid for a Summit membership before starting. One of the reasons I did was to be able to stay safe while running, even by myself, with a Summit feature called Beacon. Beacon works by sending a text when you start recording with the Strava app, either on your phone or now with Apple Watch. Whoever you text can see your live location as you run or ride and can tell if you're still going. It's also great when you're on your way to meet up with people and don't want to have to pull your phone out and text about how far away you are. A Summit membership is usually only $5 a month. But for a limited time, we're offering our Athletes Unfiltered listeners a chance to try out all 20 of the Summit features, including Beacon, for free for a full month. Just go to strava.com/podcast to sign up and start your free 30-day trial. Okay, now let's get to the show. This is Athletes Unfiltered. Stories from the Strava community.
And coming down the line over the top, McKinnon takes it into world champion, O'Canada.
It's the 2018 Masters World Championships of Track Cycling, and Rachel McKinnon has just won the gold medal in the Masters 200-meter sprint championship. She crosses the line on her bike and reaches out to hold hands with her competitor in celebration. A few minutes later, she's on the podium receiving her gold medal and rainbow jersey, and somebody snaps a photo.
Ladies and gentlemen, the medal ceremony of the UCI Masters Track Cycling World Championships in Los Angeles.
This photo seems so benign. It's just her on the podium. But it sparked a gigantic onslaught of backlash, harassment, and hate directed at Rachel. That's because Rachel is a transgender woman. She was born biologically male, but identifies as female. And she was competing against cisgendered women, women who were born female and identify as female.
In first place, the winner of the women's 35 to 44 sprint, Rachel McKinnon of Canada.
And even though she's gone through hormone therapy and gets tested regularly to make sure her testosterone is below a certain threshold, comments about her win still ranged from how people thought it was unfair to stuff that was just straight up transphobic and hateful. It wasn't the first time that Rachel had gotten harassed online or in person, but it was definitely the most overwhelming.
It was probably about 100,000 hateful comments. At this point, it's millions of hateful comments. I've received a few death threats. I pass those on to the people who need to see them. I receive physical hate mail at work. I receive tons of electronic hate mail. And even just today, before we were recording, I had to delete two hateful comments on an Instagram post. So I had to have people monitor my Twitter for me, monitor my Instagram to delete or report or block all of these accounts making these hateful comments. And it absolutely got overwhelming.
This is Athletes Unfiltered from Strava. I'm Jean Mack. There's a lot of controversy about gender identity and transgender athletes in sports, especially when those athletes start to win. So we wanted to talk to Rachel about her experience. What's it like to be in the center of that storm? Rachel McKinnon is actually Dr. Rachel McKinnon. She teaches philosophy at the College of Charleston in South Carolina. It's a big part of who she is, but so is sport.
I've long identified as an athlete. So when people ask me, like, what do you do? I'm like, well, I'm a professor, but I'm also an athlete. That's just part of who I am.
Rachel is from Victoria in British Columbia, Canada, and she was born male. She didn't transition until she was almost 30. Her parents were sports fanatics, so she grew up playing baseball and rugby and tennis, but her dad was especially passionate about golf.
I was golfing probably since I could grip a club. When I was about 5, I broke one of our front windows in the house, quote-unquote golfing, And
despite the property damage, Rachel kept at it and eventually worked her way up to being a Canadian golfing phenom.
I won the junior club championship. I won a bunch of regional level tournaments. So golf was honestly my first career path. I was on the path of professional golf until a pretty bad car accident at 16. I still got to quite a good level. I was still a scratch golfer, but you know, to be pushing at the pro level, you've got to be able to practice 4 to 6 hours a day, and I just physically couldn't do that.
So Rachel turned her attention to another sport, badminton. Not just like set a net up in your backyard badminton. Hardcore, indoor, Olympics badminton.
Yeah, and if we were to go outside right now, you and I, and play on the badminton field, court, I'm actually not quite sure which one, how badly would I lose to you at this specific moment?
It would be pretty embarrassing.
So just like golf, Rachel was elite. She was a provincial junior champion and competed at the national level a bunch of times. Eventually, Rachel accepted a tenure track job at the College of Charleston in South Carolina. And as you might expect, there aren't really any top-level badminton players in Charleston. The people who did play just did it recreationally. She couldn't find a game.
As an elite badminton player, if I can find 3 or 4 people who could play me at the same time, so like 1 versus 3 or 1 versus 4, I would still be
wow.
able to train at a high level. But they still
wild.
Have to be a certain level to make that work, and then they have to be willing to do that. And people here just weren't quite good enough and weren't quite willing to sort of switch how they played to let that happen. And so it was took me about a month to just give up on badminton being something I could pursue here at a high level.
So Rachel went looking for other sports. First up, running.
I tried running. I've tried running so many times. you know, the longest thing I'd done was a half marathon distance, but I'm not a bad runner. My body's not built for it. So even though I've tried to get into running as my sport or physical activity, my body just can't handle it. And there was a spin class really close to where I work. And so I just thought, yeah, I'll try spin classes. I'm gaining weight and this is not okay for me. So I need something to try. And then just fell in love with it.
A month in, she started thinking, hey, maybe I should get a road bike. A couple months after that, she bought one. And just 5 months after she signed up for the spin class, she was competing in road races and winning.
When did you realize I'm good at this? Like, I actually am killing it.
Yeah, I think it was something like my fourth race, maybe my third or fourth race. I was in Albany, Georgia. And the crit finished in a sprint. And it was just like the most pure feeling of you want to push harder and the bike goes where you want it to. And so I won this race in a really long sprint, and like won by like 5 bike lengths or something like that, like pretty significant
wow.
gap. And that was sort of the moment where I'm like, wow, my body's really good at this. It's better at bike racing than I've been at any sport that I've done before.
Rachel raced on the road for a few years. And like every other sport she tried, she was good at it. She never quite won at the national level, but was winning lots of races at the regional level. But despite her winning, or maybe because of it, or maybe both, Rachel says that she started getting harassed.
Yeah, it started my second ever race, ever. That's when it started. And then it just spread, particularly because I started winning. It just spread. It took over.
Rachel mentioned one particular instance of harassment where women she was competing against banded together to lie about Rachel violating the rules so that she would be sent to last place. It worked. And the harassment had a profound effect on Rachel. She described it as a shaking in the corner sort of thing, which sadly isn't uncommon. Nearly half of all trans people suffer from anxiety or depression. And a lot of the pressure that Rachel felt was coming from within the sport, but she tried not to engage.
No, I basically never ever respond. I don't think a lot of lot of good comes from me validating their sort of negativity. Like, you know, I don't think bullies should be ignored, right? That's sort of like ignoring it goes away. I don't think that's true, but I'm not going to sort of give them a satisfaction of knowing that it upset me. And so I try not to think about it, but yeah, I certainly didn't feel welcome, but I thought that sort of my development as a racer was more important.
Rachel kept training and racing and winning. A few years in, she had really hit her stride.
You know, my fitness was the best it had ever been. I was doing really, really well. So like things were going great. And then I had a really bad crash. And that coincided with the first really big round of online harassment and attacks that I've received.
The combination of those two things, Rachel said, was the straw that broke the camel's back. Her anxiety got really bad.
And so it was this big culmination of like being injured, having crashed, and then like basically I developed PTSD. That's like, it was something that was kind of in the background for years, but it was like the straw that broke the camel's back. And so I like full blown PTSD, like shaking in the corner sort of thing. And that just wrecks your ability to perform as an athlete. Like I was failing relatively easy workouts and just couldn't get the training in. And so I still had my entire summer of pro stage racing scheduled. And so I still went and did it. But like I was getting dropped from races that I should have been contending for the win, and was just intensely frustrated and disappointed and honestly embarrassed at these results.
Yeah, that makes total sense that obviously you wouldn't be racing as well when you are dealing with immense amounts of stress. I mean, any stress on your body is stress, right? Regardless of where it comes from.
So road cycling wasn't really working out for Rachel. But then she went to a race in Minneapolis and stayed with her friend, Anna Schwinn.
A friend of mine, Anna Schwinn, of the Schwinn bike family, she lives in Minneapolis, and I was staying with her for a pro stage race in road up there. And she'd been wanting to get me on the velodrome for forever.
The velodrome. That was a term I'd never heard before until I saw this video. And let me tell you, it's wild. Rachel's specialty is an event called the Match Sprint. It's a one-on-one competition. And in the video, there's a French and German cyclist racing against each other. The French guy is in a blue jersey, and the German is in white. They're on the velodrome, which is a banked circular track.
This is the gold medal ride. Run number one.
So the race begins. The German guy in the white jersey is in front. And I'm just going to describe this on the fly. They are going so, so incredibly slowly, like the equivalent of walking. And the French cyclist, he's barely moving. And the guy in front, he is like sort of looking back a lot. It's almost like this game of chicken of like who's going to make the first move. They're just going so slow, and they're now going up that angle. Literally, their legs are barely moving. Okay, now they're kind of going a little faster. Nope, they're going back up. And now they are actually stopping. Like, their feet are doing this weird dance that looks kind of like two birds doing a mating dance that, like, I've seen from our planet. And now they're sort of cycling. No, now they're stopping. They're looking at each other. They're kind of right next to each other. And they're doing that hopping movement again. Okay, now the guy in the white jersey is out front, but barely, and he's looking back. He's honestly not even looking ahead of him at all as he moves forward slowly. Like, if there was anything happening in front of him, he would just crash. And all of a sudden, this guy in the blue jersey, the French guy, is going so fast. He, like, started to go down the bank, and then he went back up, and now the guy in the white jersey went down the bank, and he's going super fast. He's in the lead. He's, like, put his head completely down. He's pedaling all out. They're going incredibly fast. And, oh my gosh, the guy in the blue jersey just won.
70.803 kilometers an hour.
By like half a second. So the race is over, but the French rider who won doesn't look super happy because this was just the first round. It's best out of three. They have to do this whole thing again, maybe even twice again.
It looks like he's excited about a monster coming to kill him. Like, he's, like, pumping his hands up and down, but his face is like, wah, what just happened?
Rachel was a great sprinter in road races, but she hadn't ever done the match sprint event until she went to the Velodrome in Minneapolis.
Which is this gorgeous outdoor wood track. It's just, it's so unique. And she gave me a private lesson on how to ride the track. And wow, I just completely fell in love. There's something really cool about going from the top of a 45 degree bank track and diving down, picking up all that speed, and then going around a corner at 60 plus kilometers an hour, like nearly sideways. It's really cool.
Whoa. Oh my God. That sounds terrifying to me. Ah.
But for Rachel, it wasn't terrifying. It was exhilarating.
That was the moment where I thought, holy crap, this is what I'm like actually built for. So it was really this fish to water moment where everything came naturally. It was so much fun. I mean, it's a ton of work, but like I could not be happier as a track cycling sprinter.
Yeah, that must have been an amazing feeling to be like, oh, wow, this is precisely what I'm supposed to be doing. This is using all of my talents.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. And I was good at badminton, but like my body was just like built for being a bike sprinter.
And it wasn't just Rachel's body that was a better fit for the Velodrome. It was the community, too.
Track racing tends to attract more of the weirdos. In like a really endearing way, I mean. So a lot of us are misfits, and I think we just tend to get along with each other.
What do you think it is about the track and track racing that attracts the weirdos?
Wow, I don't know. Like, I'm glad that it does attract the weirdos because I am one. they're the best people, but I don't know. There's something. There's less prestige about it. There's less pressure to. Like, you're not going to win a pro contract and make tens of thousands or millions of dollars in track cycling. That just doesn't exist. So I think that sort of pressure that's off makes for better people.
Whatever it is, Rachel liked it more. And she continued to get better, all the way up to where we began this story. The 2018 Masters World Championships of Track Cycling. The event was happening in Los Angeles, and Rachel needed a place to crash. She ended up getting connected to a woman named Lucy. They'd never met, but were part of the same feminist cycling group on Facebook. Lucy offered up her apartment.
Just an air mattress in her living room. Very glamorous as a bike racer. And I've slept in worse.
The competition was 2 days long, and the first day went well for Rachel. Really well. She actually broke a world record, though it was broken a few minutes later by someone else. She went home, got some shut-eye on the air mattress, and went back to the Velodrome the next day. Rachel has a pretty strong sense about what she needs before races. She's not an athlete that requires 100% concentration all day leading up to the event. For her, it's actually the opposite.
I know that I have to keep myself distracted at races, so if I'm surrounded by really good people or I have my computer and often I watch comedies to sort of laugh, that keeps me sort of out of my own headspace.
Got it.
So on the day of the finals, I knew there was going to be like a 4 hour or so break between the semifinal and the final. So I took the air mattress. I took this like full queen-sized air mattress into the Velodrome, into the pen, set it up, and in between the semi and the final, was chilling on the bed, put a sheet on it and everything, and watched the Kona World Championships on my laptop. And
I love that.
I know a ton of people were giving me this side eye, just like, what the hell is she doing? This weird, what is this? But every single person who gave me that side eye, like 5 seconds later, was like, that is a brilliant idea. I can't believe I didn't think of that. So like everyone was jealous.
About 30 minutes before the race, Rachel started getting ready.
So skin suits on, got my helmet, found my shoes. Bright red Canadian pants. So they are like a Canada branded pant. And then I cut off the cuffs at the bottom to get them over my shoes more easily. So they're these bright red Canadian pants.
Remember, Velodrome match sprints is best 2 out of 3.
and there's a lot of strategy involved.
And one thing we've worked on in training camps is the way that I look from the front, from seated versus standing, looks almost identical. So it's really hard to tell when I've stood up and started sprinting. So that was sort of my plan. You sort of see me in the video. I do a head fake as though I'm trying to like dive down. So I was trying to make her like go down before she wanted to. And she didn't fall for it, which I was very disappointed about. But then I start sprinting into the final lap, and she had a bit of a delayed reaction. I managed to pass her into the first corner and then just held her off to the line. So basically the first race went completely to plan.
In between races, Rachel went back to her air mattress and relaxed until it was time for the second race.
Straight back to the bed. Took my shoes off, you know, chilled out.
And the bed.
Yeah,
so good.
just laid down, chilled out. Just relaxed as much as I could, kept my mind off of everything as much as I could, watched videos on the computer. And so we get rolled up to the line, and I'm the lower rider, the first rider. And one of my favorite parts of starting a match sprint is the stare down. So we're being held next to each other, just staring at each other from behind our visors. It's a pretty good photo. And so we get let down, and I keep it really, really slow. So she's behind me. We're half a lap in, and
they start racing and play these mind games with each other for the next lap, trying to deke each other out and gain the upper hand. Then the second lap, they essentially start to wind up their sprint, not necessarily going as hard as they can, but still very fast. Strategically, Rachel has to stay 4 or 5 bike lengths behind the other rider so that she has room to accelerate while still drafting.
And so the entire time, all I'm thinking about is like calculating how big this gap needs to be and then accelerating into it. And with half a lap to go, I stood up and just gave it everything I had, but my legs were just like, nope. So I sit back down and I'm closing in on her. So I said to myself out loud, come on, like actually audibly come on to myself to keep going, to keep pushing. And with about 15 meters to go, so not very far, is when I finally made the pass. And I knew I'd won, put my hand up. It was just pure elation. Definitely the happiest moment of my life.
The woman she was racing against extended her hand, and they biked side by side, hands raised together in victory. Then Rachel got off the bike.
So, hug Lucy was the first thing I did. but the thing about winning a world championship is you are immediately greeted with a person from anti-doping. And they introduce themselves as your chaperone, and they are not allowed to leave your side until you go to the bathroom with them. So,
wow.
Yeah, pretty much immediately after, like, I'm still happy. I had just hugged my friend for winning, and it's like, hi, I'm so-and-so from anti-doping. I'm like, oh, awesome. so now, like, I'm trying to, like, be happy and, like, take off my shoes and stuff and think about the podium. And, like, I've got this person watching me the entire time. And
so not quite ideal, but things got better.
They ask me what size rainbow jersey I wear, and they sort of explain what the podium ceremony is going to be like. And I explain to the guy who sort of hands you the stuff, like the flowers and the goodies, like a block of wood. yeah, I'm not kidding.
That's the award?
Yeah, it's a little block of wood that just had a plaque on it about the world championship. So it's not like an award. It's just a literal block of wood. I don't know. It's weird.
Soon enough, Rachel was on the podium, in between the other two competitors, with a gold medal around her neck and the Canadian national anthem playing.
I think that's the only time I've ever had the Canadian anthem for me at an event. Because it's the only time I've sort of been representing Canada in some sense as a mm-hmm. at a national or an international level. And that's definitely one of the proudest moments of my life. Like, I'm not a very nationalistic person, but it was just, yeah, like being able to hear your national anthem and look at the flag being raised for you was really special.
So Rachel uploaded that photo to her social media, and she tagged a bunch of different cycling sites. She thought her win was newsworthy.
but she didn't see any of the immediate backlash.
So I wasn't really quite aware of how much things had blown up until I landed back home in Charleston the next day, like the next evening. And by then, it was the Daily Caller and Breitbart and Alex Jones of InfoWars, and like just the right wing had blown up. That's when I was like, oh, shit, like this is not going to go well.
Yeah. And I know it doesn't feel good to dwell on it, but I guess I'm just curious how it feels to have that kind of hate directed at you. Like, how do you internalize it? How do you deal with it?
Yeah, it's pretty, honestly, it's surreal. Like, I'm just this girl from Victoria, BC. Like, why am I this newsworthy? So it's gotten to the point where I'm definitely the whipping girl for all trans athletes, that any story that even tangentially relates to this topic, they mention my name. Just so, you know, Caster Semenya is in the news a lot. She's not trans, she's intersex. And my name is in almost every story. There have been multiple times that I've just tweeted something and it's been a news story. And so, like, this is a brand new thing that I've had to adjust to. This idea that my life is now constantly under surveillance. I have been what's called doxed. So people hired a private investigator to find my private information and then post it publicly.
Wow.
Yeah, so like my phone number and my all my like even past girlfriend's information, my mom's information, like it's messed up, my past addresses.
Yeah.
I can't own a home in my own name ever because that's public information. So we own our house, but I'm not on the title because they could find that out and then do stuff. So it's like it's adjusting to a new reality that's been tough.
Was there any part of you that thought, you know, maybe I won't race again for a little while?
No. So for the past 2 years, I've been...
Over the past few years, Rachel has started to ramp up her activism. She started a cycling club called Foxy Moxie. They promote trans and gender nonconforming inclusive sport through competitive cycling. She also has started to really focus on being a professor and an elite athlete who specializes in athlete rights. She teaches a class at her college on gender and sports, and she does a ton of media. But Rachel's mental health got worse after the World Championships. She says that she was able to keep training because her coach was able to take her mental health into account. But last year, when Rachel was training to make the Canadian national team for the 2020 Olympics, she got into a bad crash. She broke a few bones.
So with how rough this spring was in terms of training and the interruptions from the mental health stuff, we've kind of given up on the Olympic dream. So we're in a period of adjustment now of, like, how do we restructure my racing goals? So certainly the big goal is to defend the World Championship in October, but we're not quite sure what to do with the summers now. It's hard. It's like this dream I've had pretty much my whole life, and having to let go for reasons that didn't have to do with me. So
Rachel says that if she really wanted to and committed to it, she might be able to put in the time and effort to train for the Olympics in 2020. But that's not her main focus anymore.
I think I can do more good as the outspoken activist than I could just racing my bike. I already know it's making a difference. I already know, like, a lot of people reach out to me and say, look, I didn't think I had a place in sport, and then I saw you do this amazing thing, and I signed up for the gym the next day, or I signed up for a race, or I contacted a team to start racing because of you. And so I don't think it's a hard choice to choose helping others over pursuing my own goals.
Can you envision a world where your being trans isn't an issue? Like, is that something that you ever think about?
Well, of course.
Yeah,
I don't think transphobia is going away in my lifetime. I see us getting there, but wow, if it happened in my lifetime, I would be shocked. Pleasantly shocked, but shocked. I just want people to recognize that we're just people and I'm listed as female. I'm treated as female, and I'm like as a medical patient, I'm treated as female. All of my ID, my birth certificate says female on it. Like, I'm legally female. I'm legally a woman. So we can't have a situation where we say, I respect you as a woman, except for sport, because we can't isolate sport from society. It's all or nothing. And I just want people to recognize that we're just people. And when people want to talk about us and use us as case studies, to remember that we are people with feelings, and we can often see this, and to think about what we must feel like seeing people talk about us as though we're not there.
So there is still this debate around fairness in sport. A lot of sports are trying to figure out how to keep the playing field even, and that's really, really hard. But just because the issue is complicated, just because it's controversial, it doesn't have to be hateful. Rachel's an athlete, and she's trying to do what any athlete would do, to race, to test herself against other athletes. Is that alone offensive? What is it about wanting to race her bike that makes Rachel deserving of death threats? Rachel's a competitor. It's part of her identity. She's also a woman. And she shouldn't be forced to deny one part of herself because of another. This story was produced by me, Jean Mack, and Alex Kappelman. Editing by Kyle McCall and Peter Frickwright. Music and sound design by Robbie Carver. Thank you to Dr. Rachel McKinnon for sharing her experience with us and fighting for equal rights for all competitors. Athletes Unfiltered is powered by Strava. Strava is the best app for tracking and logging your runs, rides, swims, or hikes. It keeps track of the data from those activities and lets you share it with your friends, family, and training partners. And for athletes who want to use all of our best features, check out Strava Summit. With Summit, you can use relative effort, which shows if you've been training too hard or not hard enough. You can use Beacon to share your location during activities, and you'll get even more access to features that'll help you unlock your best performance. Strava Summit costs less than $5 a month. Think of it as just a couple of gels or energy bars. And for a limited time, we're offering our Athletes Unfiltered listeners a chance to try out all 20 of the Summit features for free for a full month. Just go to strava.com/podcast to sign up and start your free 30-day trial.